Language holidays. A trip abroad for the purposes of learning your target language and exposing yourself to the culture of your target language's home. Leitner box. Paper-based spaced repetition systems. They use a flashcard file, a carefully designed schedule, and a few simple game rules to create the same sort of spaced repetition magic you'll find in a computer program like Anki. Levels of processing. One of the mental filters that determine what you remember and what you forget. You'll best remember things that you know have a spell, structure, you know how to pronounce, sound, you understand or see, concept, and you relate to personally, personal connection. LiveMocha. One of the more popular language exchange websites. Feel free to ignore its language courses. Its main use is to connect you with a language exchange partner. LiveMocha.com. Memory game. A game you can play with any new word to help memorize it. Can you find a personal connection with this word? If so, you'll remember it 50% better. Minimal pairs. Pairs of words that differ by only a single sound, like niece, knees, or bit, beat. Minimal pair testing. A test using pairs of words that differ by only a single sound. If you test yourself with minimal pairs, do you hear rock or lock? And get immediate feedback. It was lock. You can permanently rewire your brain to hear new sounds. fluent-forever.com/chapter-3. Mnemonic imagery game. The process of attaching a mnemonic image, say masculine is exploding, to a word, say dogs, which are masculine in German, to form a mnemonic story. Kaboom goes the dog. The more vivid and weird you can make your story, the better you'll remember it later. Mnemonics. Memory aids that turn something that's abstract, e.g. the masculine gender in German, into something that's concrete, e.g. an explosion. They take advantage of our extraordinary visual memory, and you can use them to memorize many irregular, nonsensical patterns in your target language. Monolingual dictionary. A dictionary that is 100% in your target language. It provides full definitions for your words rather than simple translations. Once you reach an intermediate level, you can use a monolingual dictionary to learn even the most abstract of words in your target language. You'll find good ones in print, but at least toward the beginning, you'll want to find one online, because you can use it in conjunction with Google Translate to get translations for those definitions. This gives you the best features of a bilingual dictionary, that it's usable right from the beginning, and a monolingual dictionary. It teaches you tons about your words at the same time. You'll find dictionary recommendations on my website, fluent-forever.com/language-resources. More is less. The idea that the more things you learn about a topic, the easier it is to remember all of it. That's why you'll have an easier time learning a language like Chinese if you make many more flashcards than you otherwise might for a language like Spanish. Neuron. Nerve cells that transmit signals within your brain and connect your brain to the rest of your nervous system. A memory is what happens when a group of neurons fires together and interconnects. Output. Writing, for the most part. When you write, you test out grammar and find your weak spots. Output is the way you turn the hundreds or thousands of little facts you've learned into a usable language. Person, action, object, PAO. A memory technique used in competitive memorization. The basic premise is that you can pick a relatively small number of people, actions, and objects and connect them to form a great number of weird, memorable stories. We can use it to add flexibility to our mnemonic imagery. E.g. connecting a mnemonic person and or object to a verb we're learning, or a mnemonic person or action to a noun we're learning. Phoneme, a single sound in a language rather than a single letter. SH, sh, is just one phoneme in English, even if it's spelled with two letters. Phonetic transcription, converting a word into phonetic letters, usually into IPA. Phrasebook. A small, cheap travel companion that tells you how to say various canned phrases, e.g., help, someone stole my purse, may I buy an apricot? The phrases inside can serve as useful bits of language that you can learn starting in Chapter 5. At the end of most phrasebooks, certainly those made by Lonely Planet, you'll find a great little dictionary. This is an easy, convenient way to find good translations for the 625 words in Appendix 5. Pronunciation Guidebook. Books that walk you through the pronunciation and spelling system of your target language. They should come with CD recordings, and you should be able to listen to and mimic those recordings. pronunciation trainers. Software programs that are designed to rewire your brain to hear new sounds. They are the easiest and fastest way I'm aware of to learn the sound system of a new language. fluent-forever.com/chapter-3. Pronunciation videos. Videos that explain in depth how you make sounds in your mouth. I've made a series of free YouTube videos that take you through a tour of the IPA and your mouth and have really helped out a lot of people. Check them out. fluent-forever.com/videos. Recall practice. This is just another word for testing. You're trying to remember something, and that effort is what makes a memory lodge itself into your long-term memory. RhinoSpike, a free language exchange community devoted to providing audio recordings. You submit a text in your target language, and a native speaker will read that text aloud and send you an MP3. In exchange, you'll record someone else's English text. The service is lovely, but be aware that it can occasionally take several days to get a response. RhinoSpike.com. Self-directed writing. The same concept as output discussed earlier. Skype. A computer program that facilitates free phone calls and video chats across the internet. For the purposes of language learning, it's the program you'll use to connect with language exchange partners and private tutors on the internet. SKYPE.com. Spaced repetition. An extraordinarily efficient learning method, whereby you learn something and then wait a few days to review it. If you still remember, then you wait even longer before your next review. By studying in this way, you push memories deeper and deeper into your long-term memory. Spaced repetition systems, SRSs. Automated to-do lists for flashcards that monitor your progress and tell you which flashcards to study on which days to maximize efficiency. They come in two main forms: computerized systems, which create your daily to-do list based upon relatively sophisticated algorithms, and paper versions, known as Leitner boxes, which accomplish the same goal using a set of simple game rules, a flashcard file box, and a calendar. Spot the differences. A game you can play with Google Images, in which you look up a word in your target language and see whether the pictures are what you expect to see or not. The more differences you can spot between your expectations and what you see, the better you'll remember your word. Summaries of TV shows and movies. You can find target language summaries of your favorite TV shows and films on wikipedia.org. If you read them before you watch a film or TV show in your target language, you'll have a much easier time, since you won't have to try and figure out what's going on, and you'll already be exposed to much of the vocabulary that will show up in the dialogues. Taboo, the game of taboo. A party game by Milton Bradley that closely resembles the ideal type of practice for fluent speech in a foreign language. In the game, you have a list of forbidden words that you must talk around. In real life, you have a bunch of words that you simply don't know, and you have to talk around them, too. Tense, aspect, mode. I don't specifically discuss tenses, aspects, or modes in this book, but I do hint at them in Chapter 5. These are all just ways of playing around with verbs. We can play around with the time of a verb. Tense, I am eating, I was eating. Or play around with our sense of a verb's progression through time. Aspect, I am eating now, I eat regularly. We can even play around with the certainty of a verb. Mode, I would eat, I could eat. These three are often intermingled. Tomorrow you will get me cookies. Future tense. You will get me Girl Scout cookies right now. Mode. You'll pick up on tense, aspect, and mode by reading the explanations in your grammar book and learning lots of example sentences. Thematic vocabulary book. A book of several thousand words and their translations arranged by theme. Words about money, words about music, words about clothing, and so on. It's a handy tool for customizing your vocabulary to your individual needs once you've built a foundation using a frequency list. Tip of the tongue. A phenomenon in which you can recall parts of a memory, but not all of it. If you experience a tip of the tongue event and then successfully recall something, you'll double your chances of recalling it successfully in the future. Vowel. A phoneme made by allowing air to come out of your lungs relatively unimpeded. You can make different vowels by changing the position of your tongue and lips. Vowel backness. One of the three components of any vowel. Your tongue can move forward, eh, and back, Vowel height, one of the three components of any vowel. Your tongue can move up, E, and down, ah. Vowel rounding, one of the three components of any vowel. Your lips can round into a circle, oo, or flatten out, E. Wikipedia, a kind of magical dictionary. If you find an article in English, you can often find that same article in your target language by clicking on one of the links on the bottom left-hand side of your browser window, the links labeled Languages. This lets you find the translations of terms that won't show up in your dictionary. Terms like the Game of Thrones, which may not be translated word for word when remarketed to a non-American audience. The Game of Thrones TV series, for instance, is called Le Trône de Fer, the Throne of Iron, in France. Wikipedia is the easiest way to find this information, and you can use it to help you search for DVDs, books, and so on. wikipedia.org. Wikipedia, IPA for, insert language here, articles. Articles on IPA in various languages, e.g. IPA for Spanish, that can show you all the sounds of your target language, its IPA symbols, and a bunch of example words. If you know IPA, they can be really handy. To find them, Google for IPA for, and then put your language. But don't actually type put your language. Put, like, French or something. Wiktionary. A crowdsourced dictionary, much like Wikipedia. Aside from the enormous English dictionary, which can show you translations of most words in the English language into most languages, Wiktionary contains a large number of excellent monolingual, French-French or Spanish-Spanish, dictionaries. Many of these also include quality IPA transcriptions of most words. wiktionary.org. WUG. A fake word used by linguists to test children on their ability to internalize a language's sound rules. English-speaking kids learn to say one wug, two wugs, with a Z, automatically, by the age of 5, which is kind of neat since they've never heard of wugs before in their lives. YouTube, a source for pronunciation advice and information. While it can be somewhat unreliable, many of the tutorials you'll find there, if you search for, say, how to trill an R or the Arabic Ayn, have been created by native speakers and can help you hear and produce new sounds. If you're going to start somewhere, start with my pronunciation series, linked at fluent-forever.com/videos. YouTube is at youtube.com. Appendix 1. Specific language resources. Books to get and websites to visit. The Modern Language Association performs routine surveys of the languages that American college students are learning. Here are the top 15 languages in fall 2009. Spanish, French, German, American Sign Language, Italian, Japanese, Chinese, Arabic, Latin, Russian, Ancient Greek, Biblical Hebrew, Portuguese, Korean, and Modern Hebrew. On my website, I have resources for every language on this list, except for American Sign Language, Latin, Ancient Greek, and Biblical Hebrew. Those languages require some special modifications, since the first is not a spoken language at all, and the last three have no native speakers. You'll find these resources at fluent-forever.com/language-resources. Appendix 2. Language Difficulty Estimates. For English speakers. The Foreign Service Institute, FSI, is the U.S. government's training center for diplomats, ambassadors, and James Bond types. They've been in the language business since 1947 and have some of the best data on language difficulties for English speakers. Their students take on an intense workload, 25 hours of language classes per week and 3 to 4 hours of independent study per day. Not surprisingly, they reach advanced levels of fluency very quickly. Still, we'll be able to beat them in terms of total time spent because our methods are more efficient. FSI courses are relatively traditional in format, although they do have a respectable emphasis on pronunciation that keeps them ahead of the curve. They may beat us in terms of total time to fluency, simply because you get a lot done when you make language learning your full-time job. However, our use of imagery, mnemonics, and spaced repetition will push us ahead in terms of overall efficiency. The following estimates show the total amount of time FSI students spend in class for each language. Level 1. Languages closely related to English. 23 to 24 weeks, 575 to 600 class hours. Some highlights. Afrikaans, Danish, Dutch, French, Italian, Portuguese, Spanish, Swedish. Level 1.5. Languages with slight linguistic and or cultural differences from English. 30 to 36 weeks, 750 to 900 class hours. Some highlights. German, Indonesian, Swahili. Level 2. Languages with significant linguistic and or cultural differences from English. 44 weeks, 1100 class hours. Highlights here include Armenian, Czech, Finnish, Georgian, Greek, Hebrew, Hindi, Hungarian, Icelandic, Latvian, Pashto, Persian, Polish, Russian, Slovenian, Thai, Urdu. Level 3. Languages which are exceptionally difficult for native English speakers. 88 weeks. 2,200 class hours with a second year of study in country. Arabic, Cantonese, Japanese, Korean, Mandarin. Appendix 3. Spaced Repetition System Resources. Computerized Spaced Repetition Systems. Anki. Anki's website is ankisrs.net. ANKISRS.NET. There you'll find download links and installation instructions. Once you've installed Anki, you'll need to learn how to use it. To make your job easier, refer to my series of video tutorials and demonstration decks, which you'll find at fluent-forever.com/chapter-2. Making cards by hand. Leitner boxes. If you prefer the feel and look of paper to the cold blue glow of a smartphone screen, then you can make an SRS by hand. It will take you longer than using a computer, but you'll learn a lot more while making your cards. Keep in mind that many of the online resources we've been discussing are just as useful whether you use computerized or physical flashcards. Your copy-paste process is simply different. It takes longer, it's more flexible, and it might look a little sillier if you're not much of an artist. If you find a great example sentence on Google Images with a seemingly useless image, Google Images can provide sentences for every word if you ask it nicely, you'll be in a better position than someone using a computerized SRS. Now, if you're trying to make 300 cards in an evening, or make a bunch of pairs of comprehension and production cards, you'll be working harder than someone who can cut and paste with a couple of keystrokes. Because you'll be using a physical box instead of a computer program, the intervals won't be the same for every card. Some cards' final intervals will wobble between 2 and 4 months. This doesn't turn out to be a big deal. If you have a problem remembering a card, it will return often enough to work its way into your long-term memory, and if not, then huzzah, you remembered it. Here's what you'll need. 1. A whole bunch of index cards, at least a couple thousand. 2. A large index card box or file. 3. 8 index card dividers, labeled New, Level 1, Level 2, and so on, all the way up to Level 7. 4. A calendar. 5. A trusty set of pens and or pencils, and colors can help you make more memorable pictures. Put your index card dividers into your index card file box, in order from New to Level 1, all the way up to Level 7. Eventually, you'll have index cards in all of these sections. The rules of the game. Your Leitner box is a flashcard game. You win the game when you get all of your new cards past Level 7. To accomplish this, you'll need to successfully recall each of your cards 7 times in a row, with increasing delays between each recall. If you win, you can expect to remember each of your cards for more than a year. How do you get from Level 1 to 2? Every time you review a flashcard, you'll look at the front side of the card and ask yourself a single question. Do I remember what's on the back side of this card? Depending upon the type of flashcard, vocabulary, grammar, or pronunciation, this question may have multiple parts. Do I remember the correct pronunciation of this word? Do I remember the word that goes along with this picture? Do I remember the proper spelling for the word that goes along with this picture? In the gallery, every time I introduce a new card type, I also discuss the questions associated with that card type. If the answer to all of those questions is yes, I do remember, then move that card to the next level. E.g., level 2 cards will move to level 3. If you answer, no, I forgot something, then you'll move that card all the way back to level 1. How do you know when to review your cards and which cards to review? The Lightner Box game is designed for daily play. Each day, you'll follow the following 2 steps. Step 1, move 15 to 30 new cards into level 1. And then step 2, review your cards according to the game schedule. The game schedule is a 64-day repeating schedule that tells you how often to review your level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 cards. Roughly, you'll review level 1 every day, level 2 every other day, level 3 every 4th day, all the way up to level 7, which you'll review every 64 days. Since there aren't 64 days in a month, we'll need to add a 64-day cycle to a calendar. The way that works is as follows. Let's say you start learning on May 5th. Let's say it's a Monday. You're going to write a 1 on May 5th, a 2 on May 6th, a 3 on May 7th, and so on. 64 days later, you are now in July, July 7th, and you write a 64 on July 7th, and then on July 8th, you write a 1, July 9th, 2, etc. You keep going on that way. Once you've marked up your calendar, you can simply refer to your calendar to figure out where you are in the 64-day cycle of the game schedule. And you can find that game schedule at fluent-forever.com/appendix3. I will, however, give you a couple of examples. When I play with my Lightner Box on, let's say, that May 5th, our very first day, I will follow the 2 main steps of the game. First, I'll move 15 to 30 new cards into level 1, and then I'll consult my game schedule. The schedule tells me that I should first begin with level 2 cards, and then proceed to level 1 cards. But this is the very first time I'm playing. I don't have any cards in level 2. I'm just starting out, after all. So I pat myself on the back for a job well done, and proceed to level 1. Level 1 is pretty simple today. I review my 15 to 30 new cards that I stuck into level 1. Every time I remember a card, I move it into level 2. Every time I forget, I put it at the back of the pile of cards in level 1. With enough repetitions, I'll eventually move every card from level 1 up to level 2. And once I've done that, I'm done for that day. Now we're on May 6th, day 2. And that proceeds in much the same way. According to the game schedule, I'm supposed to review levels 3 and 1. But again, level 3 is empty. And level 1 only has my 15 to 30 new cards for that day. By the end of the day, I now have 30 to 60 cards waiting for me in level 2. Now it gets interesting. We're on May 7th, day 3, and I'm supposed to review levels 2 and 1. And so I pull out those 30 to 60 level 2 cards. I review every card once. Every time I remember a card, I'll move that card up to level 3. Every time I forget a card, I'll move that card back down to level 1. Next, I'll review my cards in level 1, which are now a mixture of the 15 to 30 new cards I placed in it and the cards I had forgotten from level 2. Every time I remember a card, I'll move it into level 2, and every time I forget, I'll put it at the back of the pile of cards at level 1. Like I did on the previous 2 days, I'll keep going through this pile until all of my level 1 cards have moved into level 2. And then I'll pour myself a martini and call it a day. A winning card. Let's track the progress of a winning card through the game schedule. On May 5th, this is day 1 where we're supposed to do levels 2 and then 1. One of my new cards has the word Mochka on it, and on the back side has a picture of a cat, since Mocsko is the Hungarian word for cat. I'll see that card when I review level 1, and since I've spent so much time yammering away about cats in chapter 2, I don't have trouble remembering what a Mocsko is. I immediately move that card to level 2, finish the rest of my reviews, and put my Leitner box away. Now we're on day 2. The schedule tells me to do levels 3 and then 1. On this day, I don't see Mocsko, because I'm not reviewing level 2 on that day. Instead, I see Mocsko again on day 3, where I'm supposed to review levels 2 and 1, at which point I still remember it, and so I put it into level 3. 3 days now pass before I see it again, on day 6, when I'm supposed to review levels 3 and then 1. I've reviewed Mocsko twice now, and so my memory is getting stronger, even though I'm waiting a longer and longer period of time between reviews. I remember it in this case, and I bump it up to level 4. Now I wait an entire week. On day 13, when I'm supposed to review levels 4, then 2, then 1, Mocsko shows up a fourth time. A few days earlier, I learned motrots, or mattress, and as a result, I have some trouble trying to remember whether Mocsko is an animal or a piece of furniture. After a few seconds of gut-wrenching uncertainty, I remember, and so I move that card up to level 5. We're getting close to the end of the game for Mocsko. I wait more than 2 weeks before seeing it again on day 28, where I review levels 5 and then 1. After conquering my Mocsko-Motrots mix-up, I don't have a problem remembering, and so I move Mocsko to level 6. Level 6 comes on day 59, where I'm supposed to review levels 6, then 2, then 1. This is a full month since I saw it last. When I remember Mocsko and bump it up into level 7, I can almost taste my victory over that word. I now have a formidable task in front of me. The only time I see level 7 is on day 56, where I study level 7 and then 1. And so I have to wait for the cycle to repeat, 2 months before seeing this card again. When it returns, I could lose everything. If I can't remember, Mocsko will fall all the way back down to level 1, and I'll need to repeat the cycle from the beginning. If I remember, I'll win, and Mocsko will go into retirement, living out the rest of its days in the comfort of my long-term memory. What if I miss a day or two? Do all of your reviews from the missed days, and make sure you start with your highest level cards first. If you missed days 57, where you study levels 2 and 1, and 58, where you're supposed to study levels 3 and 1, then on day 59, where you're supposed to study levels 6, 2, and 1, you should do levels 6, then 3, then 2, then 1. On that day, you can skip learning new cards to help make up for the extra review time. Appendix 4, the International Phonetic Alphabet Decoder. In this appendix, we're going to be talking about one thing, how to make new sounds. But there is a useful tool that we're not going to be covering here because it is a written tool, the International Phonetic Alphabet. To learn about that tool, I want to refer you to a series of video tutorials, which you can find at fluent-forever.com/videos. Through those videos, you'll be able to link what we discuss here with the written system of IPA. The makeup of consonants and vowels. Almost every consonant is a combination of three pieces of information. Where's your tongue? What's your tongue doing there, and are your vocal cords doing anything? Vowels are a combination of two. Where's your tongue, and are your lips in a circle or not? And that's it for the most part. When we hear someone speak, we're hearing this information. I use this information to correct my students' accents. I hear where their tongues are and tell them how to correct. You can do this for yourself once you get attuned to it. Our ears and our mouths are deeply interconnected. No one ever told you how to say the letter K, and yet you've learned how to raise the back of your tongue to hit your soft palate in exactly the right way to make a K sound. To make new sounds, you only need to gain a bit of awareness about what you do automatically in English, and then make a few small adjustments. So let's gain some awareness, starting with consonants. Consonants, location. Where's your tongue or lips? Repeat the following words after me. B, fee, the, see, she, ye, key, and he. Notice that the word be starts by your lips. Fee touches your bottom lip to your upper teeth, and every successive word goes further back into your mouth. The touches your tongue to your upper teeth. See brings your tongue right behind your upper teeth. She brings your tongue back a little bit further, back behind your alveolar ridge. Ye brings the middle of your tongue towards the roof of your mouth. Ki brings the back of your tongue up against your soft palate. And he is all the way back in the bottom of your throat. These are 8 of the 11 possible locations for your tongue and lips. And we'll refer to them by their letters. Location B is with your lips. Location F is with your lips to teeth. Location S is right behind your teeth, etc. 3 more locations. The French R, the Arabic Ayn, and Apu's D. What's missing? There are 2 locations hiding in between K and H. One that touches your uvula. The French R sound is here, along with the guttural H, as in Chanukah. And one that sits as far back as you can put your tongue, as in the Arabic Ayn, which can affectionately be described as trying to choke yourself with your own throat. The last missing location shows up regularly on The Simpsons. You know Apu, the Indian shopkeeper at the Quickie Mart? His distinctive accent is largely due to a particular location of his D's and T's. Normally, a D or a T is articulated in the same place as S, with the tip of your tongue. Say C, D, T. It's all in the same place. Hank Azaria, the not-Indian voice actor for Chief Clancy Wiggum, Moe the bartender, and Apu, articulates Apu's D's there, too. Only, instead of using the tip of his tongue, D, 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 he's using the underside of his tongue, d, d, d. The tip of his tongue is curled back toward the roof of his mouth. This makes his D's and T's sound like a tom-tom, t, t, rather than a snare drum, t, t. And it conveys an unmistakable sense of, oh, this guy must be from India. Welcome to the Quickie Mart. You'll make sounds in this location if you learn Hindi, Chinese, or Swedish. Consonants. Type of sound. What are you doing there? We have a lot more than 8 consonants, so there must be a few options at each location. Try repeating these words after me. Toe, no, so, low, row. All 5 of these words are at the same location, behind your upper teeth. For each word, you're changing how and whether you allow air to pass around your tongue. You can mess with your tongue in 8 ways, and you already use 5 of them frequently. T-type, a sudden pop of air. Here you're preventing air from passing through until you've built up so much pressure that the air pops through in a sudden rush of sound and spittle. T, D, P, B, K, and G all fall in this group. N-type, air through the nose. These consonants come through your nose instead of your mouth. N and M are both in this group. S-type, rustling, hushing, buzzing sounds. There are a lot of sounds here, from sibilant s to buzzing z to hushing sh. You're allowing a little bit of space for air to pass over your tongue, which makes the air shoot off and make all sorts of angry noises, from the rustling, hushing sounds of f, s, sh, ha, and th, to the buzzing sounds of v, z, and v. L-type. Air moves over the sides of the tongue. Here you're preventing air from escaping out the front, but you're allowing it to pass freely over the sides of your tongue. We only have 1 of these in English. L. R-type, a slight obstruction, almost a vowel. The English R is a strange beast. It's one of the most difficult sounds to produce, which is why most children spend a fair portion of their childhood talking about waskowy wabbits. You're not obstructing the flow of air at all, but you're raising your tongue just enough to cause a change in the sound. We have three consonants that do this. R, W, and Y. And they're more like vowels than consonants. R is basically the R in turkey, W is basically the U in hoot, and Y is basically the E in see. The last three types of consonants show up in Spanish, Spanish again, and Icelandic, respectively. Trilled type. Your tongue or lips flap in the wind. The Spanish double R resides here, as in carro. Your tongue moves up to location S, but instead of allowing the air to hiss through, it flaps like mad against the roof of your mouth. Rrr. If instead you let your uvula flap against the back of your tongue, you get the French rrr. Yay. Tap type. Your tongue or lips flap together just once. The other Spanish R, as in carro, resides here. You're doing the exact same thing as a trilled consonant, only instead of flapping your tongue a bunch of times, you're doing it once. It's very similar to an extremely short D. If you're trying to say Spanish's carro accurately, you can often get your tongue to behave properly by saying cado while thinking carro. Cado, carro. Crazy Icelandic L type, a slurping wet L sound. Unless you're learning Icelandic, Welsh, or a Native American language, you can ignore this, but it's too neat to leave out. You know how L-type consonants allow air to flow freely over the sides of your tongue? Oh. Crazy Icelandic L-type consonants narrow that channel of air until you hear a loud, wet, rasping sound against your molars. It sounds something like... Will you be able to produce a good French R merely by flapping your uvula against the back of your tongue? Probably not. This discussion is designed as a supplement to your ears. Your ears taught you all of these tongue positions in English, and they'll do most of the work in your new language, too. We're only discussing theory, flapping uvulas and all, in order to give your ears and tongue a helping hand when they need it. Sometimes a little point your tongue towards your tonsils is all the instruction you'll need to bridge the gap between what you can hear and what you can say. Consonants, vibration. Are your vocal cords doing anything? This last bit of consonant trivia is the simplest of the three. Put your finger on your throat. Now, compare the sound s to z. Notice how you can't feel anything buzzing in your throat for s, but you can for z. This buzzing is the sound of your vocal cords doing what they do best, vibrate. Vibrating and non-vibrating consonants frequently show up in pairs. B and p, v and f, d and t, g and k, to name a few. Note that your vocal cords can be buzzing while you make a consonant that doesn't really sound like buzzing at all. N. Creating new consonants. To make a new consonant, you'll mix and match all three of these features. Let's try a demonstration from Hungarian. The word for Hungarian in Hungarian sounds like a cross between Magyar and Magyar. It's Magyar. Not surprisingly, the real consonant we're looking for is halfway between J, as in Magyar, and G, as in Magyar. And it's in the Y location, with the middle of your tongue reaching the roof of your mouth. So keep the tip of your tongue down by your lower teeth and try to say a J sound. G. The middle of your tongue should raise up since you're forcing the front of it down. If you succeed, G. You've just done a fairly complex new maneuver with your mouth. G. You've combined location Y, type T, a sudden pop of air, and vibrating vocal cords into a new consonant. G. If you did that, Congratulations. This is the basic method behind new consonants, and you should have an easier time doing it in your target language because you've already listened to the sound you're trying to create and because you watched that video I told you to watch in the beginning of this appendix. Vowels. Where's your tongue? Vowels are simultaneously simpler and harder than consonants. You're not performing any complex motions when you say a vowel, but your tongue needs to be in a very precise location in order to sound right. Practically speaking, you'll have an easier time finding this position by relying upon your ears and imitating rather than trying to manually place your tongue in the right place. Still, knowing the basic tongue positions can help you out when some weird vowel causes you trouble. Your tongue can go up, down, forward, and back. Say e, e, and ah, and you'll feel your tongue move from high, e, to medium, e, to low, ah, in your mouth. For forward and back, you can try e, forward, and ah, back. E, ah. These movements are tiny. We're talking about a half inch, and that's as far away as any two vowels get. This is why your ears are so important in this equation. It's not that hard to benefit from a description of a consonant. Put your lips together and blow until they flap together and go brrrr. But a vowel is a different animal. Put your tongue in a position of E and then go back an eighth of an inch and down a quarter of an inch. That's of questionable practical use. You'll use this information in a different way, by comparing your new vowel to the vowels you already have. English has 9 or more, depending upon how you count. Most new vowels you encounter will put your tongue right in between two vowels you already know, or they'll be the same as a vowel you know, only you do something different with your lips. Vowels. Are your lips rounded into a circle? You'll probably need to learn to separate your lips from your tongue. When you say the vowels oo and e, you round your lips in a circle for oo, and you flatten them out for e. But those aren't the only possibilities. Korean features an oo with flat lips, u. And Chinese, French, and German all have a round version of e, u. Try it. Say oo, e, oo, e. And get a feel for how your tongue's moving. It moves back for oo, and forward for E, U, E. And then pick one of those tongue positions. Let's do E and stick with it, E. Then, without letting your tongue go back, keep it forward, E. Squeeze your lips into a circle, E. You'll hear the sound change into some weird hybrid of U and E, U, which is exactly the sound we're looking for. Voila. Now you can pronounce fondu correctly. Appendix 5, your first 625 words. Rather than reading out 625 words in a row, I will send you to my website, fluent-forever.com/appendix5. There you're going to find a couple of lists in different orders. In this section, we're going to talk a bit about those lists. So welcome to the 625 words. These words are going to form the foundation of your language. They're some of the most frequent words you'll encounter in any language, and they're all relatively easy to learn with pictures. In general, you shouldn't have much trouble finding translations or pictures for these words, and they'll take you a month or two to memorize. A word of warning. You won't be able to find a simple translation for every word on this list because this is a list of English words. Your target language may have multiple words when you only have one. Russian, for example, has two separate words for blue. Dark blue is синий, light blue is голубой. Or the reverse may occur. Vietnamese, for example, has one word for both blue and green. Words don't always map easily from language to language. We're only using this list as a time-saving device. So when you run into difficulties with a word, skip it. There are plenty of other words in the sea. There's no harm in spending a minute or two investigating a particularly elusive word on Google Images, but if none of the images make sense, and your time will be better spent elsewhere. Move on to the next word. While you peruse your dictionary or phrasebook, you may find a few interesting words that aren't in this list. Learn those too. This is your vocabulary. Learn whatever words you want, as long as you can do it with pictures. Formatting. On my website, I give you this list in two different formats, a thematic list and an alphabetical list. The thematic list is much friendlier on the eyes. You'll see colors, foods, locations, occupations, the verbs, the adjectives, and so on. Skim through that list first. There, I'll give you a few pointers about how to find the images you need. Words like December can take a bit of finesse. But then, when you're ready to make your flashcards, use the alphabetical list. I prefer to use an alphabetical list for two reasons. It's easier to use with a dictionary, and it teaches your words in one of the best possible orders. Randomly. Order matters. In grammar books, we learn words in thematic order. We learn colors, articles of clothing, and numbers, one lesson at a time. This feels comfortable, but it makes words much harder to remember. They get mixed up. Is set the word for six or seven? Was jaune the word for green or yellow? You can minimize this problem if you learn green and seven now and yellow and six later. You'll accomplish this automatically if you look up your words alphabetically, since the foreign language translations for an alphabetical list of English words aren't going to be in any recognizable order. To save time, find your words in the glossary of your grammar book or in the little dictionary at the end of a pocket phrasebook. These are in alphabetical order like a normal dictionary, but they're not full of synonyms or thousands of words you don't need. Just go through and mark off the 625 words as you find them. Anytime a word is missing, skip it. Within a half hour, you'll have a giant list of useful words to learn. Then open up Google Images and get cracking. A couple of tips. First, there are three types of words that you'll find most easily in a chapter of your grammar book rather than the glossary. Personal pronouns, e.g. I, you, he, she, we. Numbers, e.g. 1, 2, 3, or 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. And dates, January, February, March, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You'll find reference to these in the table of contents or index of your grammar book. When you want to learn these words, find these sections of your book, read through them, and then make your flashcards. Second, when you learn your words, keep in mind that you're not restricted to a single picture per word. You can use two or three pictures to help identify a word, and you can even add text. We're avoiding English, but that doesn't prevent you from adding names, numbers, and symbols to your cards. When learning the word for friend, for example, you can write a friend's name under the picture. You can use numbers and symbols for many abstract words, e.g., 1 minuto is 60 segundo. Parent equals papa / maman. In the list, I've included suggestions of this sort when appropriate and marked off two special types of words, categories and easily confounded images, which we talked about in depth in the four special scenarios section of the second gallery. If you prefer to copy and paste your words into an online dictionary, you can copy the lists at fluentforever.com/appendix5 and paste them into that dictionary. In my experience, though, it's faster and easier to use a paper glossary or a Little Lonely Planet phrasebook. Alternatively, I'm commissioning professional translations of this list in a bunch of common languages. You'll find those translations at the same Appendix 5 link. Appendix 6. How to use this book with your classroom language course. My goal throughout this book is to show you how to learn a language on your own. But what if you're already enrolled in a language class? Many of my recommendations are at odds with standard classroom fare. I'm not a big fan of translation exercises, and I don't think that endless grammar drills are a great use of your time. So should you quit? Sit in the back and secretly make flashcards? Hand your teacher this book and demand that they redesign their class accordingly? Or is there something to be gained from standard classroom language courses? In the first chapter of this book, I made a claim. No one can give you a language. You have to take it for yourself. I stand by that claim. No language course will teach you a language on its own, nor will any grammar book, tutor, girlfriend, or computer program. Every language learning resource is just that, a resource, In the end, you have to take those resources, wrap your brain around them, and turn them into a living language. So while I think there are some things that can be improved in typical classroom courses, I think the exact same thing about typical grammar books and dictionaries and phrase books. Hell, there are a few things that could be improved in Google Images and Anki, for that matter. But I've never told you to throw away your grammar book, and I'm not going to tell you to quit your language class. Quite the opposite, in fact. As long as your teacher is any good and you're enjoying yourself, your class is a wonderful resource. Stay in it. It's like a walking, talking grammar book. Every time you show up, you're exposed to a bunch of new grammar rules and example sentences. You hear words and sentences spoken aloud and acted out. You get to try out new patterns in spoken and written exercises. And you even get corrected homework assignments and tests, both of which are pure grammatical gold from my perspective. When you're in a class, your primary goal should be to take the information you receive and stick it into your own head. Use illustrated flashcards. If you encounter a new grammar rule, get some example sentences. If need be, ask your teacher and create flashcards accordingly so that you never forget the rules. If you get corrections on your homework assignments, turn those into flashcards so that you don't make the same mistakes ever again. If you do this, and if you review those flashcards on a daily basis, you'll find that you progress much faster than your peers. Your class is going to get very easy, and as a result, you'll have more time to devote to your own personal language goals, learning vocabulary, reading books, watching TV, and so on, while your language class continues to spoon-feed you information. Whenever I'm taking a class, and there's a wireless internet connection handy for accessing Google Images, I'll often take my notes directly into Anki. I'll make flashcards for everything we discuss as we discuss it, and within a few weeks, I'll have memorized basically every word the teacher has ever said. The strategy makes you feel really, really clever, and it's a great way to use your classroom time efficiently. When you know how to teach yourself a language, a good language class is a true luxury. Savor every minute of it. One last note about technology. The techniques described in this audiobook take advantage of many internet-based tools, all of which have a tendency to change, break, or improve from month to month. If you try to use one of these tools and find that it doesn't behave the way it should, go to this URL, fluent-forever.com/changes. I'll use that page to keep track of any drastic changes and provide alternative tools if needed. This recording of Fluent Forever was presented by Dreamscape Media, LLC. Text copyright 2014 by Gabriel Weiner. Sound recording copyright 2016, Dreamscape Media, LLC. Thank you for listening. Please check www.dreamscapeab.com for Dreamscape's latest releases.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.